In this discussion with Brenda Hood, we discuss the Chinese clock, or as Brenda likes to call it, the tidal flow clock. You'll find a copy of this particular clock over in the show notes page, and I recommend you get your eyeballs on it, as it includes some stems and branches resonances that we'll be getting into later in the conversation. Let's get into it. Hey friends, I'm back with Brenda Hood again. You have probably heard our previous conversation, and today we're taking a look at the Zhuo clock, the meridian clock. You know, we all in school learn about this clock in terms of organ function, but there's so much more to it. In fact, I was talking with Brenda over lunch today. There's a lot more to the names of the channels than just the organs. Brenda, why are you so keen on using, I'm going to call it the full name of the channels?
Well, because, you know, there's a number of people who refer to this as the organ clock, which I think is a really bad idea. I think it intellectually leads people down into a dead end, and that it reduces the complexity of what we're trying to talk about. In the original inner canon, this particular clock, which I refer to as the tidal flow clock, it's just my name for it.
Yeah, no, it makes sense though.
Yeah, so the tidal flow clock was all about the channels. And in English, it was not about the organs, it was about the channels. But there's a confusion in the Western world. I can't speak for other countries, but in English we talk about the stomach channel, we talk about the liver channel, we talk about organ channel. And the problem with that is that it emphasizes the organ over the channel just because of the verbiage. Whereas if we talk about it by its full name, which could be, for example, you know, foot tie-in spleen channel, or I'll sometimes just say the tie-in spleen channel, all of a sudden you realize that what you're talking about is the channel which connects to the organ.
And there's something about knowing, oh, it's the tie-in. What's the nature of tie-in? That also starts to come into play, right?
Exactly. And so it really helps your brain understand a different level of complexity. And it doesn't reduce it to the organs inside the body. This is my theory of how it works. The organs are inside. It is my belief that when you use herbs, the effect primarily and firstly happens in the organs and then secondarily on the channels. But when you are treating channels, the effect happens primarily on the channels and then secondarily affects the organs.
So is this because herbs are primarily material in nature, and so they first act on the material aspect of channel or slash organ, goes into the organ and then into the channel, whereas acupuncture is primarily more qi-based, it would act first on the channel and then the organ?
I don't know that it's as simple as that. I think that it's
a simple mind. I'm just trying to get it.
You do not. I think it might be part of it, but I think the difference is that herbs are taken internally. And so they're first of all going to the organs, and from the organs they are then, that energetic change which they can produce then goes to the channels.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what I mean by herbs are primarily material. Organs are primarily material. It's through the material.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
Okay, tell me more.
Because my understanding of the organs of Chinese medicine is that they are stations for the storage of essence, which allows for the transformation of the qualities of energy. And while they are somewhat related to the physical organs of the body, it's a different level that we're working at when we're talking about Chinese medicine. Chinese medicine is supposed to be and was originally intended to be about qi anatomy, which can be affected, of course, by the physical body, but the magic of it lies in the energetic body or the qi body and the anatomy of the qi body.
So when we're talking about, let's just say liver, because for some reason we love to pick on the liver here in the West.
Well, he can stand up for himself.
The liver is capable of standing up for it. The wood, let me put it this way, the wood element is capable of standing up for itself. Now, just saying wood element, this gets into a whole other thing, which I want to circle back to in a bit. Because when I say liver, I am talking also about wood.
Mm-hmm.
But wood also has its yang expression.
Sure.
In the gallbladder.
Sure.
But that's not Zhiyin, that's Xiaoyang.
Yeah. Well, when we talk about the organs in English, and it goes back to the original, primarily Protestant minister / doctor translations of the medicine of China into English. And they chose English names to translate the organs without the understanding that they weren't specifically talking about the physical organs, but rather we're talking about an energetic construct to explain the cycling within the vitality mechanism that is described by the five-phase theory. And so when we come into English and we talk about, oh, well, the liver or the stomach or the spleen or whatever organ it is we're talking about, because English as a language leads us to think about stuff as things rather than functions or properties, then it's really easy to confuse the stomach with the physical stomach. And it's not to say that it's not somehow related.
There's like a big overlap, right?
But there's a big overlap. You have to understand, though, that the stomach as an organ within the body has certain functions as defined physiologically by Western medicine, only some of which correspond to the energetic and functional descriptions of the stomach. And that if you are not able to get beyond the physicality of the stomach into these other more abstract ways of organizing information, you're never going to understand what the stomach is about, because you add information that was never intended to be there and remove information that is vital to the understanding of the stomach. And so you need to be able to get into a more abstract way of looking at the body and be able to slide between different levels of abstraction in order to really be able to understand what Chinese medicine is talking about. And so you can talk about the stomach, which psychologically tends to reduce it to you thinking about the physical stomach, or you can talk about the Yangming stomach channel, which then is a little weird, but now we know we're talking about something else entirely. Or we can talk about the stomach as the yang aspect of earth, which brings it even higher level of abstraction, which then removes it from the physicality of the stomach and brings it to a more abstract level where there are different kinds of meaning that interact with all of these other abstractions in ways that the physicality of the body does not.
So it seems that a lot of us that do Chinese medicine are drawn to it because it seems to... How do I say this? Kind of fit in with the idea that nature is this, in some ways, undifferentiated wholeness, but at the same time, there's all these parts within it. And that we're talking about a medicine that's very embodied. And I'm hearing you talk about higher levels of abstraction. How does that all go together in your mind?
Well, you know, as we study Chinese medicine and you look at how things are structured, it really looks a lot like a fractal, which is why we can have holographic correspondence, because each small part is a reflection of something larger.
And influences.
And it can go up the ladder into greater levels of size or down into the smallest itty-bitty pieces. But that's in part how I understand how the microsystems, which I refer to as holographic correspondence, work. And so when you're doing Chinese medicine, the different levels of abstraction bring in and separate out levels of meaning, which are very useful in understanding what's going on in the inner workings of the individual.
Okay, but, and now that makes sense to me, that we're bringing in other levels of meaning. When I first hear the idea of, higher level of abstraction, in my mind, that takes me into getting away from how things are. We're just getting into abstraction.
No, I
get it. I'm seeing where my error was. You're talking about being able to bring in other pieces of vital information. So, for example, if we're just talking about stomach, you know, as that piece of meat, and let's say if we're looking Chinese medicine-wise, the piece of meat plus its function, all right, that's one thing. And a higher level of looking at it than just piece of meat when you start to include its function, but when you start talking about now it's also yang ming, that tells us something else. Okay, so, and I'm with you on that. That really brings us into looking at the six jing, the Liu Jing, the six confirmations, whatever you want to call them. I'd like to hear from you a little bit about what it means for something to be yang ming. Why does that matter? Or not why does it matter? That's not a good question. How does it matter, especially in the clinical context, that we're able to consider this as an organ that's yang ming? What's the yang ming piece that's so important that we should be considerate of?
Well, if you look at the original characters, what you're looking at is yang brightness, mm-hmm. implying that there is some aspect or element of light which is associated with this channel. It's the only yang channel on the front of the body, which is the yin side of the body, and so it is bringing...
It's kind of weird, isn't it?
It's bringing light into the darkness.
Oh.
Okay, and so that function of bringing light...
It's bringing some yang into what otherwise is more yin.
Sure, and the whole function of the stomach... or yang wood, is to take that which comes from outside and begin the process of transforming it into the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And so the function of the yang organs is to continue that process until eventually you get rid of that which can no longer be transformed into self and therefore must be voided out. So the yang organs are processing, and if you notice also, the yang channels of the body are longer than their yin correspondents, all of them.
They are, aren't they?
All of them, yes.
So the yang, let me think about this for just a second. So we've got the yang wood, that's gallbladder. That's a long one.
Yeah, and
we
liver.
We have yin.
Dreyin liver.
Dreyin liver is kind of short.
It's kind of short.
I mean, its internal branch goes all the way to the top of the head, but...
But if you're talking about the external branches...
Yes. And if we're looking at the heart, that's pretty short.
Yeah,
length
but the...
Length of your arm,
intestine. The small intestine is... The Taiyang small intestine, if we're going to be consistent
the
about this...
The Taiyang, that's right.
You know, okay. It's much longer. And what are the implications of that? I mean, it's something I've noticed, and I haven't quite worked out the implications of that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it is notable.
It is.
Okay. So it seems to me, in using the full name of a channel, Taiyin lung, for example,
mm-hmm.
because we know it's Taiyin, that tells us something. We may not know everything that it means, but if we call it by its full name, we leave open the possibility that we might discover something important about it, partly because it's lung, but also partly because it's Taiyin.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you think about, you know, the Taiyin, and you think about the theories of opening, pivoting, and closing.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Okay, I'm not going to go deep into this.
No, but I maybe we need to go deep into this. And here's why. I do not understand open, pivot, and close. And I have talked to a number of different people. And as we have the conversation, I kind of get it. And then it slips away from me again. I really don't understand open, pivot, close.
Okay, so the Taiyang and Taiyin both open.
Taiyang and Taiyin open.
Okay.
Okay.
The Shao is pivot. So Shao Yang and Shao Yin both pivot.
Okay.
And the Yang Ming and the Dreyin close. Okay. That's simple. The Yang aspect of that, so you've got Taiyang opening,
mm-hmm.
Shao Yang pivoting, and Yangming closing. And it's kind of like they work in unison, almost like a heartbeat left and right. So you have the opening out of the Taiyang, the pivoting of the Shaoyang, and the closing of the Yangming, bringing it into the yin aspect.
We're just talking about that.
Which then opens out to accept this energy from the yang into the yin. It needs to open out with the tai yin, which is the paired of the yangming, correct?
Correct, the digestive organ.
And then it goes into the shao yin, which is the water fire axis.
Yes.
And then the dre yin, where things start the reversal process. And so it's like a double pump, like the heart. So it's opening on the top yang aspects, and as it closes, the bottom yin aspects open. And
then it squeezes it down into the yin.
And then it becomes interior, and then that interior then reverses up, and the yang starts to open again. Does that make sense to you?
It's beginning to make sense. And you said it's like a pump. And when I think about like the heart, where it will bring in the venous blood, right?
Yeah.
And then it pumps it out into the lung. And then it pumps it back in.
And the arterial blood goes out. And so it's not exactly like a heart, but it has that.
But it's that same sort of double pump.
The double pump kind of system, where you're going from yang, which is exterior, and bringing it into yin through the pivot of the yangming stomach to the tai yin spleen.
Yes.
Which then brings it further.
Which then takes it inside so you can pull out the nourishment.
You can pull out the nourishment.
And then get rid of what you don't need.
And get rid of what you don't need. And then it reverses up into the drain, and the whole system just starts. And it's like this amazing pumping system that is rhythmical. And if you don't talk about the channels using their full names,
you won't see how it's connected.
You don't see how it's connected. Yeah. And so you're just...
Because Western anatomy, using the names of those organs...
doesn't have that.
You wouldn't be able to get there from... You can't get there from here, so to speak.
Exactly.
But if you know the full name and you're looking at those six Jing correspondences, now it's super clear.
Sure. And my understanding, or one of my understanding, because you can have multiple levels of meaning in this. And so one aspect of the tidal flow clock that works very well for me is the understanding of the system as a compensatory mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So that each same name channel compensates for a certain environmental factor, if you wish to call it that.
Okay,
so we talk about Taiyang cold. Well, what does that mean? Taiyang cold, the two channels that are involved are Taiyang small intestine and Taiyang bladder.
Yes.
Well, when we look at...
Fire and water.
Okay, fire and water.
This is beginning to sound like a popular song.
Yeah, that would be earth, wind, and fire. No, sorry. Anyways, so... when you look at the bladder as an organ, what is one of the functions of the bladder? If you look at the 12 ministers, it says fluid is stored there. Qi transformation comes from there. Well, what is qi transformation? In the TCM model, qi transformation is the process of producing urine. It's too simple. It's not just the process of producing urine. That's a byproduct. Qi transformation within Chinese medicine refers to a lower burner in the body, which produces heat, which then is sent from the organ itself into the bladder Taiyang channel, which is the most exterior of the channels, so that you can go out into the cold.
See, this is something that I've been puzzling over, that in many ways, Taiyang is considered, well, it's the name of the sun in Chinese.
Sure.
Okay, that's one. But the other thing is, and as I've been studying Sa'am in particular, it's associated with cold, especially over on the urinary bladder side, because it's cold water.
Yeah, but when you look at the Chinese grammar, it just says Taiyang Hanye.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and so the verb is
right,
not...
Right, it's just saying Taiyang is cold.
Well, no, you're adding the verb is, which is an equal sign.
Uh-oh.
And I am not convinced that the verb that should be added there is the verb to be.
So it doesn't say Taiyang Shi Han.
Yeah, it doesn't say that at all.
It's saying, so that particle is like a weird one.
It is a weird one that's very difficult to explain in English.
Yes.
And so it's viable to think about this as the Taiyang system addresses cold.
Aha. Not that the Taiyang system is cold, that the Taiyang system addresses cold.
Yeah.
Has an influence. Could you say has an influence on cold?
Sure.
Could you say it is influenced by cold?
Yeah, you could. And that's why I think of it as a compensatory mechanism. Because where is the Taiyang channels? Or where are the Taiyang channels
of
the body?
They're on the very exterior of the body.
They're on the very exterior of the body.
Which is often involved with temperature regulation and keeping us warm.
Yes.
And it's got the name of the sun.
It's got the name of the sun. And so if you look upon it in that way, it is that compensatory mechanism which protects your body against the external environmental factor of cold,
mm-hmm.
but which also protects you against too much cold on the inside. Because if you can get the bladder to really transform qi, you're not going to be cold. And that's one of the things that they really heavily emphasize in esoteric Taoist practices. They start in the lower jiao to start that fire. And so we think about the emperor fire, which is associated with heart. We think about ministerial fire, which is associated usually with gallbladder, sometimes a little bit with pericardium. But there's also in esoteric practices something called the people's fire, and it's the bladder.
The people's fire?
Mm-hmm. The people's fire. It's the bladder. And so I'm drawing on certain kinds of esoteric knowledge. And in Taoist alchemical practices, guess where you start? You start by trying to kickstart the people's fire, the bladder.
The bladder?
Yeah, the bladder.
As a way of generating fire.
Well, for sure.
Would this explain why men as they age tend to get hypertrophy of the prostate and urinary problems?
Partly. My explanation for that in men is that if you notice the way a lot of men walk as they get older, they have what I call the gunslinger walk, which means that they're not moving their hips anymore. They're swinging their body like, you know, they can't move their hips. And so there's no circulation in the pelvic area, which means that there's no circulation of any kind of fire at all. It gets cold.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a reflection of a decrease in the Mingmen fire of the body, partly related to an inability to properly articulate the hips and move the pelvic area in a fluid way. And that's, you look out in Walmarts or some of these other stores, you got all these people in these wheelchairs or these little drive-em carts that are tootling around all over the place.
So just as a very simple practice, as men age, if we could make sure that our pelvis stays fluid and that we've got good movement in our lower jowl, that would take us a long way?
It would take you a very long way. You know something really kind of weird and very interesting I found out just a few days ago?
Let's hear it.
Most people think of belly dancing as women, and you see the women in the skimpy little clothes mm-hmm. with the tinkling. Apparently that's cabaret belly dancing. In the Middle East, both men and women belly dance.
Because it's so good for your lower dantian.
Because it's so good for that area of the body.
For the people's fire.
For the people's, well, I mean, they don't talk about it like that.
No, of course they don't. But, you know, we were talking earlier today about how different things show up in different cultures, and they kind of like rhyme with each other.
Sure. And so I was initially really surprised, and then I was really happy that, you know, there was this amazing exercise that works a lot with the internal organs and the movement of the pelvic area, and I mean other things as well, but that would really help males and females to keep that area of the body open and flowing. And if you notice, babies when they're born, they're soft and squishy and they're very flexible. And what happens when you get to the age of 80 or 90? You're all dry and crusty and
you know,
your joints
I'm
don't move.
I'm noticing in my early 60s, like putting on my shoes requires a different kind of attention that it didn't take 5 years ago.
And so there's a drying out. And mm-hmm. part of that drying out is because we're not moving the hinges. You know, it's like the door that is left in one position, and over time, it gets all rusty, and then you try and open it back and forth. And so if we're not moving properly, mm-hmm. and that includes, to get back to our original topic, these double pumping systems, then the vital fluids in the body are not going to be circulating properly, and then stagnation occurs, and when stagnation occurs, then the proper fire, the proper vitality of the body can't get to where it's supposed to be, and you wind up with stagnation in the pelvis, and then the prostate gets all swollen because there's not enough
fluids.
There's not enough yang to hold it. Remember we talked earlier about how blood is expansive and how qi holds things.
Yes.
And so here, there's not enough qi, which is a kind of fire, to hold it in its proper structure.
Okay. Wow.
Pretty cool, huh? And so if you take this stuff out of the realm of the physical body.
Right. We're not just talking about urinary bladder. We're talking about Tai Yang.
We're talking about Tai Yang, and we're talking about the whole, you know, qi transformation comes from there. And it's not just urine. It's the energetic, it is a kind of energetic physiological fire that connects into Mingmen through the kidneys, mm-hmm. right? Because Mingmen connects to the kidneys through yang fire, yang water, which is bladder, and so that's connected into the gate of life. And if you don't understand this stuff energetically, then it's not what you think it is. And if you talk about any organ and translate from Western medicine into Chinese medicine, what you wind up is this really weird Venn diagram. So that if you talk about the spleen in Western medicine has certain functions. It's understood to be like this big lymph organ that, you know, processes blood, yada, yada, yada. But if you look at the spleen in Chinese medicine, if you want to actually talk about the spleen and understand it from a Western perspective, you have to include functions of not only some of what the Western physical spleen does, but also functions of the small intestine, the large intestine, the pancreas,
some of the stomach,
some of the liver. Mm-hmm. And so by reducing it to the name of the actual physical organ as understood by Western medicine, you lose all that.
Sure. Well, and I think even a first-year acupuncture student would know that when we're talking about, air quotes here, spleen in Chinese medicine, we're not just talking about the Western anatomical spleen. We are talking more about a functional set of overlapping functions from different organs.
You'd like to think so. I mean,
really?
Well, you have to teach that to people, and whether or not...
Well, I mean, that's just basic, you know, Western anatomy. The spleen... The function of the spleen in Western anatomy is very different than the function of the spleen in Chinese medicine.
Absolutely.
All you need is a very small amount of Western anatomy to know that.
Sure.
And a very small amount of Chinese medicine understanding.
The question
to know
that. Is that when you're using the same verbiage, do you remember it when you are in practice? And sometimes what I see in young practitioners is that they forget that, especially if they are working within another modality at the same time. So a lot of people who are, say, Western doctors that have learned some Chinese medicine, that's really hard for them to make that jump and stay within Chinese medicine thinking because they're so trained in thinking of the body as physical. Naturopaths sometimes also have this same problem, and I haven't worked so much with chiropractors or physiotherapists, but I think it's also the same.
Might be the same. Okay. So again, we're kind of back to this idea that we started the conversation with, that if you're using the full name of something, you're able to bring in a lot more information.
Absolutely.
Because we're not just looking at the organ or just looking at the function. We're also looking at its six jing function and capability and relationships.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I just want to explain one more thing about this compensatory...
Just one more thing?
Well, probably a few more.
That's what I said.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So the compensatory mechanism helps the body compensate for external environmental factors. Mm-hmm. It is from one way of parsing information in Chinese medicine, a demarcation between outside and inside.
Which is super important in Chinese medicine.
Which is super important in Chinese medicine. And it's all related to these channels that are embedded within the physical body, but which, as a compensatory mechanism, extend both a little more outward as well as a little more inward. And when you're talking about their use as a compensatory mechanism for these environmental factors, then, you know, they talk about Taiyang, and in my parlance, compensates for cold, and Xiaoyang. Let me organize this a little bit. So Taiyang compensates for cold. The Xiaoyang, in combination with the Zhuiyin, there's no environmental factor that is equivalent to ministerial fire in the outside world. So when you're using these to talk about compensation for environmental factors, one of my teachers in China told me that when you think about the Zhuiyin wind and the Xiaoyang ministerial fire as environmental factors, what you're really talking about is barometric pressure.
That's interesting.
The wind pushes.
Yes.
And fire draws. Right? If you've ever been by a fire.
Sure. Yep. Okay. I'm with you.
Okay. And so for me, you know, you have wind which pushes, and is that high pressure or low pressure?
It would be high pressure.
Well, I still haven't figured it out because he never actually physically explained it. So I apologized for that. But
in my mind, the pushing would be a high pressure because you've got high pressure going into lower pressure. So it. Well, is it, well, okay. Is it pushing or is it pulling? It depends on where you stand.
No, but the physical action of wind is you feel a push.
You do feel a push.
Okay, and when you are near fire, there's a drawing or a sucking into the fire because, of course, physically it's burning oxygen, but it has that energetic drawing.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, and so if you have somebody who reacts to the weather, I know it's going to rain tomorrow because my joints hurt.
Mm-hmm. Or I get a headache. Or
something happens.
Something happens.
And they're able to predict the weather because something happens in their body. Well, that has got to be related to either the Zhuiyin or the Xiaoyang.
That's interesting.
And so you can then figure out which one it's related to. And then you can beef up that particular one, possibly by using the Yuan source point. Mm-hmm. Drawing and making sure that
firming it up
is stronger.
I have always had trouble with the whole idea of Zhuiyin wind. I mean, it's just one of those things. I like come to it and I go, I almost get this. Okay, it's wind. It's about change. All the other stuff seems to make a lot more sense to me. But that Zhuiyin wind thing has, it's always been confusing for me.
Yeah. So that's the outside of the compensatory mechanism.
The Zhuiyin wind is the outside?
Well, no, we just talked about the environmental factors and how this then helps your body compensate for these outside external environmental factors.
Mm, okay.
There's also the inside because it's a demarcation line, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have internal wind. You have...
Right, tremors and, you know, all that kind of thing.
You know, you have internal colds. You have all of these other things within this. And so the outside is dependent on external weather conditions. The inside is dependent on internal emotional weather conditions, which can then destabilize the internal system in similar ways to the ways that if you can't compensate for the weather, then you get sick or you have symptoms that arise.
And people often talk about getting sick because of the weather change. Oh, the weather's been changing and everybody's getting sick. You hear it all the time.
Yeah, but if it's just that the weather is changing, you might want to consider whether or not it's an earth thing because your transitions are not smooth.
Let's circle back to that in a moment.
Okay.
I want to stay with this Zhuiyin internal emotions on the inside.
Emotions are like your internal weather patterns. And when the compensatory mechanism of the six same name channels breaks down, then you have the incursion of pathogens or the arisal of empathogens inside the body. And so this is like basic theory from the inner canon. Internal causes of disease, external causes of disease, and why everything else falls under neither internal nor external. Because things like trauma doesn't affect the channels. They don't rise to compensate. They can be damaged, but they're not rising to compensate for these energetic patterns that are kind of pushing on them. You know, and diet doesn't directly affect them either. It affects them secondarily. And so this is how the internal, external, neither internal nor external causes of disease, this is my explanation for how that works and why they demarcate it in that way.
Let's move to the tie-in.
Okay. What do you want to know?
Everything.
Tell me, give me a starting point.
Well, okay, we're talking about the six Jing as these compensatory mechanisms. Okay. So what is the tie-in?
Compensates for dampness.
Compensates for dampness. Right. I was in my mind, I'm going, oh yeah, the tie-in is associated with damp. I hear you say it compensates for damp. Well, I'm going to try to hold two different views in my mind, which we have to do as Chinese medicine practitioners all the time, right? In the Sa'am stuff that I've been playing with lately, that's really been giving me some glimpses into the six Jing that I haven't had before. It's really been extraordinary. And why I completely agree with you that when we're talking about a channel, we should talk about its full name, because it gives us many more like points of influence that we can grasp and do something with.
Sure.
A whole lot more. So I've been thinking of tie-in as dampness. And really, there's places in the body that need to be damp. They're supposed to be damp. If they're not damp, it's a problem. And so I think of the tie-in, especially when it's functioning well, it's bringing just the right amount of dampness to where dampness is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. And when it's not functioning well,
then there could either be too much, but could there also be too little?
Well, if there's too little, then you have to look to the yangming.
Then we look to the yangming, because the yangming is about compensating dryness.
Yeah.
Could we say regulating?
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I mean, when the classical Chinese is so terse like that.
It's really terse. It's like, what the hell are they talking about?
Pretty much. You know, and so you have to look at how you see these things working in the clinic in a larger sense. And I know that the whole Shanghan Lun description of this progressive invasion from outside to inside through the six same name channels, that's one model.
Mm-hmm.
And this model that I'm talking about doesn't really negate it per se. But it's just a different, it's like turning a kaleidoscope and the pieces fall into a slightly different pattern. Mm-hmm. But they're still the same pieces.
Mm-hmm. And still going through the same prisms.
And they're still going through the same prisms. But now by shifting it and seeing a different pattern, maybe you can see a solution where in the old pattern you weren't able to see a solution.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the beauty and the terror of Chinese medicine, that by shifting things a bit, we can see something that might be useful.
Yeah.
Of course, the thing that I find, and I guess this just takes practice over time, is knowing what we're looking at and what might be useful and what might not be.
Well, the tricky part is learning to be able to swap the filters in your head, the theories that you're using, the perspective with which you're looking at what's going on seamlessly. Mm. So that, you know, okay, well, I'm looking at it from this particular theoretical perspective, and I'm not really seeing anything that's helping me.
Oh, you know what? This happens to me in clinic all the time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's like I'm working with someone, and I'm like, I just don't get it.
Well, then swap your paradigm.
Like, swapping paradigms is hard. You just say it like, change your paradigm, like change your clothes.
Well, yes.
I mean, paradigms are hard to shift.
Well, that's why you need to understand. I think of them as filters to a camera.
Filters through a camera, I can get. Shifting paradigms, that sounds really hard. Shifting filters in a camera, okay, I'm with you.
You know, and so if you put a yellow filter on this camera, then...
You're going to see the spleen.
You can maybe see the spleen. Or if you put like a green one on, you're going to see something totally different. Because mm-hmm. the way the light comes into the camera puts some things to the front and pushes other things to the back. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's not like you're looking at a different picture, but
no,
because the
different filters.
Filter is yeah. different.
That works.
Okay, we'll use that. Okay,
thanks. Because shifting paradigms, oh my God. People go to war over their paradigm.
That
I mean,
is
true. It's hard to shift a paradigm.
Perhaps the word paradigm was a bit extreme.
Well, but I guess if you're a high-level practitioner, you could shift paradigms. I bet high-level practitioners shift paradigms all the time.
Well, I think that what happens when you get to that point... You're not shifting paradigms so much as you are above the paradigms, and then you just look through the different lenses.
Uh-huh. Well, we're back to lenses and filters.
We're back to lenses and filters.
Okay.
You know, and so if you look at the structure of Chinese medicine, I believe that, and this is my personal belief, you guys can, whatever. I believe that Chinese medicine was developed from a mindset that went beyond the physical world through the process of cultivation. And then they turned around and looked back down from a higher level and were able to see these different filters from oneness. They saw yin yang.
Mm-hmm.
Then they saw things like the three treasures.
Mm-hmm.
Then they saw, you know, the four aspects and then the five phases. And so this is coming from looking at a greater whole and then successively dividing it into more and more pieces. The pieces are all defined by qualities, and they're also defined by how the relative pieces transform and change and move with each other to sustain the original entity which they form a part of. And if you look at it from that perspective, you are always looking at Chinese medicine from a holistic perspective. But if you look at it from each of the pieces, it can be very difficult to then put it together into a bigger whole.
It is difficult, and my suspicion is as well is because those of us that have grown up in the West, speaking Western languages and thinking in Western ways, we're more used to breaking things into pieces than looking at holes.
It's the function of the rational mind. Chinese medicine is not fully rational, and it's not a pejorative. In fact, it has to be that way. The rational mind is set up to be divisive, not in a negative sense.
No, divisive in that it divides things up.
It divides things up so that you can see bits of a larger thing.
Super helpful when you're trying to fix your motorcycle engine.
Absolutely. But...
Or fill a tooth, maybe.
Well, you know? There's lots of uses yeah. for it, but it's a tool.
It's a great tool.
It's a great tool, but yeah. it's not our only tool.
Yeah.
And so you need to be able to train the other aspect of your brain, which is integrative and abstract and functions well within the use of archetypes and metaphors.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get that aspect of your brain going... You have the possibility of achieving a gestalt, which means that both sides are integrated in such a way that the whole becomes greater than the parts.
Yes.
And that's how you do Chinese medicine. And if you only focus on the rational side, there's a whole aspect of the magic that you're never going to be able to see. And if you only focus on the abstract, you're never going to be able to talk about it. And you're also going to be missing part of the magic. It has to be both.
Both and.
Both and, so that you can become more than.
Mm-hmm. Again, back to use the full name of the channels, because you'll get access to all of, or you get access to more of it.
You get access to more of it. And
more is gooder.
Better.
I'm trying to make a point here.
Okay, sorry. But, you know, I mean, there is utility sometimes in looking at a person as a dysfunction in one of the phases. Oh, this person is very woody. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, this person's...
I take that as a compliment.
There you go. This person, you know, their water yin is really in bad shape.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? As opposed to referring to you know, their kidney yin is bad. Because there's different information when you say their water yin is bad or there's something wrong with the water yin. It's much more inclusive of larger concepts than just saying kidney.
Mm-hmm.
You may still at the end of the day do some work through the kidney, but now you also have the possibility of working with other parts of that system to strengthen the kidney yin. So you're expanding your ability to see treatment possibilities that might not have been there before for
you. Exactly, yeah. And, you know, it seems to me so often, really with all kinds of healing, the idea is to bring more resources and more possibility.
Sure.
And the system will often, with more resources and possibility, sort itself out.
It will sort itself out, but initial students to this medicine, you drive them crazy as a teacher because they ask you this question and your answer is often, well, it depends.
That's, yes, I got that a lot when I was in Chinese medicine school. And it did drive most of us crazy. And my teachers were very kind. And they said to us, well, if it's going to drive you crazy and this is going to be a problem, then you might want to think about doing something else because this is what your job is going to be for the next amount of, you know, X amount of years.
Sure.
After you get out of here.
Yeah.
This is the way this works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fundamental to how this works. So buckle up.
That's right.
I want to come back to the Zuo clock. You call it the tidal flow.
Yeah, the tidal flow clock.
The tidal flow clock. I like that name for it. So all y'all that are listening to this, over on the show notes page, we're going to have a picture of this particular Zuo clock, this tidal flow clock. That Brenda and I are looking at, because it's a really nice one.
Thank you.
It's got the organs in the middle, and then around that, it's got the various correspondences, like the foot taiyang or the hand taiyang. And then within it, you can see how the various, how do I say this? It's almost, I mean, it seems to me, in many ways, that the organs and the channels are divided into these, like, thirds.
Yeah, it's three sets of four channels.
It's three sets of four channels. And I mean, really it's three sets because you've got the I'm going to call it the yin aspect, and then within the yin aspect is the yang aspect.
Well, there's a couple of rules that you look at. So for example, if we look at any of these three, it's always the yin channels are on the start and very last positions of the third.
That's right.
Okay? The two
That's yang, what I mean by the yang is inside the yin.
And the two yang channels corresponding are both on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever organ channel, so for example, if we're talking about the Tai Yin lung channel, it's going to connect to the yang ming large intestine channel because the yang ming large intestine, the large intestine is the paired organ to the lung.
To the lung, right.
Okay? And then next to that...
This is Chinese Medicine 101.
Chinese Medicine 101. Right. And then next to that is going to be the other yangming channel, which is the foot yangming stomach channel. So you've got yin, yang, yang, yin. And within that, you have paired organ.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have... same name channel pairs, the yin ones on the outside of that cycle of four and the yang two on the very inside of that cycle of four.
Right. Which again, Chinese Medicine 101. We all probably got that in the first, 3 months of acupuncture school.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, some people, they have to hard memorize it.
Well, I still have to come back to it myself, but it's all in here, which is really, you know, helpful. And over the weekend, when we're taking that Sa'am class, you mentioned that the Sa'am pairings are similar to the yin-yang pairings, like lung-large intestine, except it skips one. So it's like lung-stomach.
Yes.
Spleen-large intestine. Heart-bladder. Kidney-small intestine.
Yeah, so they jump over one of those.
They jump over one. But those pairings still fit within these sort of groups of three. so to speak.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. It's interesting. Now, on this particular tidal flow clock, you've got some stuff that's on the outside that I don't understand.
I'm not convinced I understand it, but it's something I'm investigating.
Okay. So, I really love having conversations about things that we're investigating and we're not completely sure of.
Okay. So, stems and branches. When you talk about...
You know what happens when people say stems and branches to me?
You glaze over?
A little bit. It's always a little intimidating.
It's horribly intimidating.
Okay, good. It should be intimidating?
Yes.
Okay. Because every time I hear it, it's like, this is like super high level stuff. And like, maybe someday I'll understand. But I've been at this 20 years and I hear stems and branches and I'm like, uh-oh, I'm not going to be able to hold up my end of the conversation.
It's very complicated. It's like really complex.
Okay. And we're going to dip into this a little bit?
Just a little bit. I'm not going to get too deep.
Okay. And this is still an area of exploration for you.
Yeah, it is.
So
and it's an
area for you.
It's an area of exploration because when you talk about the channels connect into the organs, and we use the organ phase element to talk about the channels. Which mean, and the organs are all connected into the heavenly stems. The heavenly stems are like astrology, where they are referencing star constellations which come above the ecliptic within the Chinese constellation series. Okay, and then they use that as the basis for the heavenly stems, which then brings this into cosmic communication. The internal organs of the body, the yin organs of the body, are connected into the cosmos. The yang organs, whatever.
It's so unfair, those poor yang organs.
I know. Okay, that's all good. But it's always bugged me that when you look at the earthly branches, they have a completely different system of five-phase attribution. And so what happens is that, for example, you're talking about the Tai Yin lung channel. Everybody says it's metal, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
And that's according to the heavenly stems.
The heavenly stems.
Yeah. But when you look at the attribution based on the earthly branches, all of a sudden, Tai Yin lung channel becomes Wood Yang.
What is going on here?
Well, you know, the heavenly stems connect to the cosmos. The earthly branches connect to the earth and are all about rhythm.
So is one like pre-heaven, one post-heaven?
No, it's not that connection at all.
It's not that connection. Okay, I'm barking up the wrong tree.
You're barking up the wrong tree. Right. But the heavenly stems are a little bit more fixed and based on these cosmological rotations.
And those relate to the organ itself?
Those relate to the organs themselves.
Okay, so the
heavenly stems
relate to
the organs, which are the most internal part of the body.
Okay, so we've got this external cosmos thing that's connected to our internal organ system.
Yes.
Okay.
The earthly branches connect us to the earth, and so are all about the rhythms of the earth. Okay. And so they are fixed. They're not fixed. They're rhythmical. And so when you look at this image, sorry, I know you guys don't have it, but when you look...
It's on the show notes page.
Yeah. When you look at this image, what you see is that the Tai Yin Lung and Yang Ming large intestine channels are wood, which means that they're expansive. And that partially explains why lung spreads to the exterior.
Because it's expansive.
Because according to the earthly branches, it's expansive. And then if you look at the Taiyang bladder.
Opposite on the clock.
And the Shaoyin kidney, those are metal. And they're contractive. And so you have this expansion and contraction that's going on maybe more on the exterior of the body because they're connected into the channels. And so all of a sudden, when you look at that, in this particular context, all of a sudden you're seeing this expansion and contractive rhythm that enables us. It's another rhythm in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about the earthly branches is that instead of having only two aspects associated with earth, there are four. And each of the four aspects of Earth fall between a phase change. And so you have the Yangming stomach channel, that's an Earth channel according to the heavenly stems, mm-hmm. but it's also an Earth channel according to the earthly branches. But it falls between the Han Yangming large intestine channel, which is a wood yin channel, and
fire yin, which is spleen.
The foot tie-in spleen, which is fire yin. And so that phase transformation in the earthly branches, each one of them is separated by an earth element.
Okay.
And so it's a transformation that happens between each of these. And you don't see that pattern when you're looking at heavenly stems.
Is this related to the way that some people draw out the five-phase map with the earth being in the center?
I think so.
And for me, this is like the million-dollar question. How does it help me treat my patients?
I'm not sure. You know, I have a $2 answer for you.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, no, that's it. I don't know.
Not sure.
I'm just not sure.
This is part of your investigation right
this
now.
This is part of my investigation, but it seems to me that even though there's not a lot of discussion about this in the classical texts, it's important. And one of the things that you really notice about society today is our loss of connection with the greater environment.
Mm.
And maybe somehow it's related to this. I don't know. You know, I mean, this is just an introductory exploratory investigation.
Mm-hmm.
It's another rhythm that I see in the body. And it's a rhythm that
it's
I don't understand.
It's a rhythm between body and environment is what
it's
it sounds
between
like.
Between body and environment. So, but I don't know what to do with that information.
We don't know what to do with it. I really appreciate you bringing this conversation here, that you're in the midst of an exploration and you don't have an answer for it. You've recognized something. Maybe this holds water.
Maybe.
We don't know yet.
Well, heavenly stems and earthly branches, if you look at the inner canon, they're really, really important. Most people don't understand the seven chapters which describe the interactions of the heavenly stems and earthly branches.
Can you give us like the Reader's Digest version?
Of the heavenly stems and earthly branches the inner canon? No, I can't.
Okay, good.
Because
I'm glad it's that complex.
Well, you know, I'm one of those people that doesn't fully understand it. I know it's important. Mm-hmm. And I know there are people who do kind of understand it. And maybe if I understood it better, this, what we just talked about, would make more sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I've always found it really interesting that the Shaoyang gallbladder channel is yang water. Like, how is it?
Yang water. I didn't know that.
Well, it's look at the map.
Oh, right here. It's yang water.
Yeah, it's yang water.
Uh-huh.
It's the start of the tidal flow clock.
It's the start.
Well, I mean, it's midnight.
Right.
You know, and so it's that time when things begin to switch from yin back into yang. It's that starting point.
And it's yang water.
And it's yang water.
It's the yang aspect of water.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it's not wood in that instance. And the gallbladder is also described as being the initiator, which means it's like the key that you put in your ignition to start your car.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the gallbladder is not working, your car's not working.
Well, I'm looking at this as well. I'm looking at the stomach here as yang earth, and I'm thinking, yeah, I could really see the stomach as being a yang earth. I mean, it's like double earth.
It's double earth.
It's like
in
all
this
earth.
System.
All
yep.
earth.
Yep.
Right? It's because it's yang ming stomach. Yang ming is already connected with earth. We've got yang earth out here at the periphery. And then we look over here at the Han Shaoyin heart, it's yang fire.
Yeah. But don't you think it's interesting that the Taiyin spleen channel is yin fire?
That makes a lot of sense because Taiyin spleen does have this, you know, it's got the fire of digestion in it.
Exactly.
Right? And spleens don't like to be cold and damp.
No.
So that yin fire, that yin aspect of fire.
Which means it's a slow burning fire.
Yeah, it's a slow burning fire. What do you make of the bladder being foot tai yang, but it's also metal yang.
The bladder is a tai yang channel.
Mm-hmm.
Is that which separates and cuts you off from the external environment. It's protective. It's like armor.
It's your cell membrane.
It's like a cell membrane. And so you need that sort of cut off, that metal cutting to protect you from the outside environment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I understand that.
Okay.
But it's contractive, which means that it's pulling in and protecting your body like armor.
And then we have the foot chaoyin kidney, metal yin. Again, think of metal as being contractive, and the kidney has such a consolidating
exactly.
aspect to it.
Exactly. But it's different consolidation than the consolidation of the lungs. And here you can see where there's consolidation in lungs according to the heavenly stems, because it's a metal, and then consolidation according to the six same name channels when you talk about kidney. And the quality of the consolidation is very different.
Here's something else that's really interesting. The kidney is opposite the large intestine, which is metal.
I know. So you look and you begin to see all of these really cool patterns.
There's interesting correspondences. I don't know what they mean yet.
Me
and
either.
I love it that you don't know what they mean
yeah.
either. But we're sitting here looking at these, going inside just a little bit on this ring, looking at like tai yang and xiao yin and tai yin. I mean, we kind of get that stuff.
Sure.
Right? But expanding this out a little bit and going, oh, what about these other influences? That is some food for thought.
It is some food for thought. And some of them, when I look at them, it explains functions which are difficult for me. So, you know, when I was taught functions of the lung, that the lung is downbearing.
Mm-hmm.
Not downbearing. The lung is contractive. And it's the kidney which pulls it deeper into the body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But then the lung has this function of dispersing to the exterior. And so in the given theory, without looking at this, there's no explanation for that. But if you look at this and see the channel is a wood channel, of course it's expansive. Of course it's going to push lung function to the surface of the body.
Because it's
wood.
And it's also yang.
Yeah. So you can start to see within this a number of things which help to explain the physiology of the body rather than just needing to rote memorize it.
I guess this stuff kind of depends on context, doesn't it?
It does.
I think I had one other thing I was going to ask you about. Yes, I want to run a crazy idea by you.
Okay.
This is a kooky idea.
The kookier the better.
All right. I'm doing this in public, so it's, you know, it's a little bit spooky.
Okay. Well, it's almost Halloween.
All right. Yes, it is. As we are recording this, it's almost Halloween. All right. So, Mingmen fire.
Okay.
This is another one of those concepts that I don't think I understand it really well. But there's a couple things that have come to mind for me around Mingmen fire. So one is that, you know, it's the life gate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's sometimes described as the moving space between the kidneys.
Okay.
Have you heard that?
I have.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I've got my references in line.
Okay. I'm following you.
When I think just plain Western physiology, common yard dog anatomy, what sits in between the kidneys?
The spine.
The small intestine.
And the small intestine. Mm-hmm.
What does the small intestine do?
It's a fire organ.
It's a fire organ. It's the fire in between the kidneys. What does it do? Peristalsis. It moves. What does the small intestine do? Absorbs nutrition. It gives us life.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a really interesting way of looking at
it. I wonder if the Mingmen is the small intestine.
Okay. No. I would not go there.
Okay, good. Tell me why.
Because that's a confusion of vehicle for manifestation of function, which is a big problem in Chinese medicine, where we try and lock down physical structures to functional definitions. So yes. Okay. I've always wanted to write an article, There's No Such Thing as Kidney Young. And it makes no sense until you understand what I'm really trying to say is that when you try and fix the concept of kidney young onto something like testosterone.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with you on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're confusing a vehicle for the manifestation of kidney young function for kidney young itself. And so when you confuse the vehicle for the function, it completely screws you up, and it also limits you to saying, oh, well, you know, if it's a problem with testosterone, then it must be, you know, kidney young.
Then it's kidney young.
And
right. It's not an is relationship.
It is not an is relationship, and it also leads you to think that that's the only thing that manifests the function of kidney young, and that's not true.
That's not true. So with that in mind, I'm totally with you.
Okay.
With that in mind, this idea I have about the small intestine, I'm not saying the small intestine is the Mi'kmaq. I'm saying that the small intestine is an aspect of Mi'kmaq.
Of course it could be. You know, it's just, Chinese medicine divides the body up according to energetic function. It is in the area where there is a major fire for the body.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that when physiological fire decreases in the body, the small intestine doesn't function very well. And we know that what we need to do is we actually need to add fire in order to kickstart the digestion again.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's really common, especially with women, is that their digestive fires decrease and they don't digest well. And as people age, their ability to digest grains also decreases because their pot never gets hot enough to cook all of those grains. So when you have people with these cold digestive problems, you need to figure out how you're going to add fire into the system.
Ginger?
That helps.
Futsa?
That helps. I mean, I don't use futsa for everything.
You were talking earlier about yin yang hua.
Oh, yeah. I love yin yang hua. Horny goat weed.
How do you see that functioning as boosting up the fire? I mean, I know it's a yang tonic.
It is a yang tonic. It's a really interesting yang tonic. It is a little bit stimulating to the sexual fires.
Mm-hmm.
And so because it's stimulating to the sexual fires, it works on kidney essence, but it also helps to slightly stimulate the gate of life. And so by stimulating the physiological fire provided by the gate of life, then all of a sudden you are better able to like warm the pot. Because that's where the fire, which cooks all of the food in your digestive system, really starts.
And it makes you just enjoy life a little bit more. I would think if your sexual vitality is enhanced. I mean, when our sexual vitality gets enhanced, it's like all our senses get a little more enhanced.
Well, if you're not digesting properly, very typically your sexual desire is also down in the dumps.
Mm.
You know, it's all of one thing. And, you know, this is not Chinese medicine, but it is interesting. Recently, they've discovered that a lot of people with women with autoimmune disease, a great number of them have, guess what? Low testosterone, which is one of the vehicles for the manifestation of kidney yang.
I appreciate your discernment with that one. Yes.
You know, and so it's just really interesting to me that when, you know, one of the vehicles is no longer driving properly, that it has this negative effect on the physiological digestive fires of the body.
Yeah.
And they know that testosterone affects digestion.
And so here we're looking at testosterone, not like, oh, we need to supplement testosterone.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
No, I know that's not what you're saying. We're looking at testosterone as it's kind of a marker. It kind of says something about kidney yang, but we're not conflating it with kidney yang. So if we can work on our kidney yang, you'll probably see that vehicle marker go up.
Yeah.
But if we focus just on the marker, we're not going to be able to get the kidney yang to go up.
Yeah, I mean, giving somebody testosterone might not have the effect of raising their physiological and digestive fires in the way that we want to. Also, long-term ingestion of testosterone, the body acclimatizes and it stops working.
Yeah, the body gets lazy that way, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for this. I am looking at the tidal flow clock in a whole new way.
All right. right. Well, I hope to spur some conversation with this because, you know, I mean, why not take advantage of crowdsourcing discussions in Chinese medicine?